Hi, guys.
Heyo.
I'm Megan. I don't know if you remember me.
I'm Kara, and we are professional podcasters.
Yes. And our lives both went nuts the last couple of weeks.
It literally just...
Yeah. Kara's coffee shop exploded in a good way.
It did.
With business.
We did a soft opening, and it has not been so soft on us.
They've been slammed ever since.
It's been wild.
I showed up here 2 weeks ago to record, and it was just like completely slammed.
Yeah.
And I was like, Kara, we can't record today.
It didn't stop. I was not expecting to work that day. My staff was just like, we can't handle this.
Yeah.
So I had to go make coffee and stuff. It's been wild.
And then I got COVID and had a death in the family. So we just had to take a couple weeks off there to deal with life.
Yeah.
One thing we've always said about the podcast is we never want it to be stressful.
Yeah. We don't want it to feel like a job.
Yeah. So when it starts to feel stressful, it's okay to take a step back. So that's what we did.
Right.
Everything's fine.
Here we are.
Okay. I have an alien story
today. Oh my gosh.
I know. This one is about the wow signal.
I love this story so much.
It's so interesting to me.
Uh-huh.
So if you all know of this one, I hope you enjoy the recap. If you don't.
Yeah.
I think this is the kind of story that makes you like, something's going on out there, up there, wherever. Ready?
Yep.
Do we say this is the Witches, Magic, Murder, and Mystery podcast? Oh. I don't remember.
I don't know. I'm Kara.
Megan.
Hey, y'all.
Okay. Back in the 70s, that would be the 1970s.
Lots of things happened.
Have you heard this thing where people are being like, you're from the 1900s? You were born in the
1900s. Oh my gosh. Willow used to say that to me all the time. I was in just some antique store with, I think it was Soph, and she said, oh God, it smells like the 80s in here. I said, what did the 80s smell like? Because I don't think I smell like
strawberry shortcake is what the 80s smell like.
Exactly. And Lisa Frank.
Oh, yeah.
That's a 90s. I don't know. It could be both, right?
I think it's 80s. All right. So in the 1970s, there was this huge telescope at The Ohio State University, and it was called the Big Ear Telescope. It was part of Ohio State's SETI project, which stood for Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence.
So much. I love it so much.
So let me tell you about the telescope. It was larger than 3 football fields.
So crazy.
And the way it was constructed was like it had these 2 receivers on each end, and it would kind of rotate back and forth. Its construction began in 1956, and it was turned on for the first time in 1963.
Okay.
And then from 1973 until 1995, Big Ear was used to search for extraterrestrial radio signals.
So fun. Why didn't Kentucky partner with them? Send their signals.
It's entered into the 1995 Guinness Book of World Records under longest extraterrestrial search. The observatory, which included Big Ear, was disassembled in 1998 when developers purchased the site to use the land to expand a nearby golf course.
No, aliens don't want to golf.
And I'm like, because there's not enough golf courses in the world. Come on. Yeah. So anyway, on August 15th, 1977, Big Ear detected a strong narrowband radio signal, which appeared to come from the direction of the constellation Sagittarius.
Of course it did.
Now, in 1959, a couple of physicists from Cornell had speculated that if extraterrestrials were going to try to communicate via radio signal, they might do so using a frequency of 1520 megahertz.
That's very specific.
Well, the reason why is because that is the frequency naturally emitted by hydrogen. And hydrogen is the most common element in the universe.
Oh.
And therefore, probably familiar to all technologically advanced civilizations.
Oh.
I mean, this is a lot of speculation, but it is based in science. So basically, as Big Ear scanned the sky, that's what it was listening for.
Oh.
Is that specific frequency.
Okay.
So the way it worked, the telescope would focus on one patch of sky and listen. And then move on to the next patch of sky.
Okay.
So little tiny patches at a time.
Rotating. Okay.
And then there was a printout that recorded whatever was heard using numbers and letters.
Yeah, yeah.
So usually the computer printout that showed that data collected by Big Ear was basically a string of low numbers. 1, 2, 3s, and 4s.
Okay.
And those numbers basically represented background noise. Like the low hum of ordinary sound.
Like static,
what we get on our recording, right?
Yeah.
The telescope is sweeping back and forth across the sky, recording the sound it picks up and recording it as 1s, 2s, 3s, and 4s.
Right.
But In the late summer of 1977, project scientist Jerry Emmon was flipping through the data and he noticed something weird. Suddenly, the recorded data shifted from the usual low numbers to letters. Because what would happen is the numbers could only go up to 9.
Right.
And then it would start with letters. Okay. So the louder it got, the higher it would count
up. All the way through the alphabet?
It went all the way up to U.
Oh.
Representing a signal 30 times higher than that typical low background noise.
Oh my gosh.
The reading was actually 6EQUJ5. And if you think about how that, if you know it starts at 0 and climbs to 9 and then ABCD, it's like a bell curve, 6EQUJ5.
Yeah.
And it lasted for the full 72-second window that Big Ear was able to observe it.
Oh.
Because remember, it focuses on one patch.
Yep, and then it rotates.
And then it moves.
Yeah.
So for as long as it was focused in the area, it heard it.
So it could have still been going.
It could have lasted longer. Moved.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My gosh.
So the intensity of the signal increased for 36 seconds and then decreased for 36 seconds as the telescope
was
moved closer to it and then away from it. That makes sense also.
Yeah.
The way this signal has a bell shape, that's important because that's the shape that you would expect from a signal coming from deep space.
Yeah. Okay.
By the way, some people who read this think that that reading, the 6EQUJ5, is some sort of code.
Yeah.
Within the signal, but it's not. It's literally just
the way it was read. Yeah.
Just the computer's way of interpreting the signal it got.
Yeah. The strength.
That's all it means.
Yeah.
There's no message attached to the signal at all.
I know.
It was just a burst of raw radio energy.
Oh, that's so fun.
So when Jerry saw this anomaly in the data, he circled the series of letters in red ink and wrote "Wow" with an exclamation point next to it. And that's why we now know this as the wow signal. There have been several attempts to detect the signal since then, and none of them have been successful.
Because they were probably like, well, they didn't respond. They don't care about us.
Yeah.
We asked them a question.
They're so rude.
They're so rude. We don't want to talk to them anymore.
Regardless, the WOW signal is still considered the strongest candidate for an extraterrestrial radio transmission ever detected.
So fun.
Despite decades of searching by amateur and professional astronomers, the WOW signal has never been heard again. So what was it? It's been nearly 50 years. And we still don't know.
Yeah.
The team at Big Ear kept that telescope focused on the same celestial spot, that area where they think the signal originated from, for a month. But nothing else happened.
Hmm.
Now, remember, by the time they saw this in the data, it had been a couple of days because that was just the way. There was no like immediate alert that like there's something weird happening right now. It was a couple of days after the fact before anybody saw it. They also tried again a year later, but there was nothing.
Hmm.
And that's the main problem. The biggest argument for this not being a message from aliens is that no one has been able to find it again.
Right. It hasn't happened since.
So could it be that it was an extraterrestrial message, but it's coming from so far away that it will take several decades for us to receive it again? The nearest planet that is similar in size to Earth and located in a and located the right amount of distance from its own sun that it could support life. Okay, that's better.
Mm-hmm. It's livable.
In the way that we are located in a habitable distance. See, I said it just fine that time.
It was totally fine.
That planet is called Kepler-186f, and I would like to make a motion that we change that name immediately. Megan. I mean, why did we get like Mars, Mercury, Jupiter, and they're like Kepler-186f?
Janet.
So dumb. Janet. Anyway, there could be life on that planet, but if there is, none of us are ever going to know it because it's 493 light years away.
This is a bit away.
If life on that planet is trying to contact us, it's going to take a while for us to get the message. Quick science lesson.
Okay, fine.
The signal was a narrowband signal. And in case you don't know what that means, because I didn't.
Mm-mm, no idea.
It means there were 50 possible channels.
Oh.
Which is sort of like having 50 AM radios, each tuned to adjacent stations, right?
Okay.
And you have to have electronics to handle that because the signal only came through on one of those 50. It was very specific.
Yeah.
Where if it hadn't been so specific, we kind of would have picked it up on other channels.
Yeah.
To be able to send such a specific signal, you have to have electronics, and that's not a natural phenomenon. Mm. Natural radio sources diffuse static across all frequencies rather than hitting at just a single frequency.
Yeah.
It indicates that it was sent from an intelligent source.
Mm.
So here's a quote from a Mental Floss article. SETI scientists were able to trace the signal back to the constellation Sagittarius. Sagittarius. Let's put a T at the end of that for fun.
That's, I love that. It's a new one.
It's very scientific.
Yeah.
Northwest of the globular cluster M55. It could also be globular. I don't know.
I would think it would be globe because science, these are...
Which contains about 100,000 stars. But there was nothing there that could have made the signal. Puzzled, the scientists investigated other possibilities, including that the signal was a satellite transmission, a military signal, an aircraft signal, a broadcast beam, or even a beam that accidentally bounced off of space debris.
Oh.
None of it checked out, leaving 6EQUJ5 a complete mystery.
Oh, I don't think it's a mystery at all.
No, I definitely think it's aliens.
What if they were just hovering in their spacecraft and were like, oh, look, they're trying to communicate. They're just like on their way to the grocery. And they're like, look,
the aliens were on their way to the grocery.
Yeah, yeah.
They're just heading over to Jupiter. They had the best sales.
They do. They really do. So they were just like, oh, God, what? You're sending us a message. Let me respond to that real quick. Beep, beep. Honk through the
horn. Oh, dang, I lost my signal.
Yeah. And then we're just like, well, they didn't respond. Gotta go. I think that's what happened.
Maybe we should call somebody.
I think
let's just call NASA. Right now.
We're so good at solving this.
They were on their way to the grocery, you see.
Yeah. Gosh.
Just gotta put a woman in charge.
Jesus.
Okay. So let's.
We know science.
So let's talk about some reasons people don't think it's an extraterrestrial message.
Okay.
A few years ago,
yeah,
there was a lot of buzz because this astronomy professor in St. Petersburg College in Florida thought that they'd figured it out.
Oh, but
they learned that two comets were passing through the area that Big Ear was observing that night in 1977.
Were aliens driving them?
And that was their car. And that the signal came from a hydrogen cloud accompanying one of the comets.
Meet George Jetson.
This professor and his team even observed the comets later and got a signal from them, but it wasn't as strong as the WOW signal.
Okay,
and that's the whole point, is how strong this signal was.
Yeah,
we know that hydrogen has that megahertz. We already know that. The thing is, the guy who wrote the WOW signal, that guy who first heard the signal, when he first heard it, he met with the observatory's director and staff, and they searched the sky for any possible objects. They were looking to see if they could find an explanation for the signal, but nothing matched up. And it was a couple days later, but they're just looking around like the whole sky. Like, is there a satellite in the area? Yeah. Is there anything? So since the signal observed by the astronomy professor from that comet wasn't exactly the same, they can't really say it was for sure the source of the WOW signal.
Okay.
It does lend some credence to the possibility that it could have been a natural source, not necessarily something sent by intelligent life. Kara.
Yes, Megan.
I have been seeing all over TikTok these hair straighteners. Ever since I got my hair cut, I still feel like I'm learning how to do my hair all over again. Let me tell you, I have found one that works really well. It's from Tymo, T-Y-M-O.
Yes.
And it is the company for getting the best type of straightener for everything your hair could possibly need. It's all over social media right now with products from $59.99 to top-of-the-line straighteners. Each of their products are built to last and have so many options for whatever your hair needs are. So Kara and I received a couple of the products.
Oh my gosh, a straightener
and a blow dryer. Yeah. So I'm going to talk about the straightener because that's the one that I have used. It has a cordless design, which makes it so handy.
You traveled with it.
Yes. So it's great for getting a good hair reset on the go because it's so portable and convenient. It's called the Porta. It has this 3D comb design, which is enhanced by cutting edge MCH anionic technology. So you brush it through your hair, it straightens as it goes, and it pushes against this ceramic plate that gives a frictionless glide that promises to curb frizz by 50%. And I've totally seen that because my hair gets frizzy and this just really smooths it out. I really loved it.
Okay, so I got the air hype. I'm obsessed with it. I have just like naturally curly wavy hair, so it was a huge game changer for me. It dries your hair in half the normal time and it keeps your hair safe and shiny, which I noticed immediately. I didn't even need to straighten it afterwards, and usually I do because usually I have all those wild like curls left over. The wind power on this thing is intense. It's wild. Like, I turned it up, I was like, let's play with these buttons. Okay, so it has three magnetic styling attachments. They're all amazing. You know how some blow dryers you get are like, if you go to a hotel and there's a diffuser and you're like, oh my gosh, this is like tearing my hair to pieces and it's going to be so tangled. Not with this one.
Nice.
And it's magnetic, so it's great.
So right now, you guys, our listeners can get 30% off their first order at tymobeauty.com. T-Y-M-O beauty.com. using the code WMM30. So that's just two M. So you guys know our codes usually have three. So just keep that in mind.
So with so many great products to choose from, now's the time to upgrade your styling and curling kit. So go to TYMOBeauty.com and use the code WMM30 for 30% off your first purchase.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Another possible explanation is a signal could have been a transmission from a secret military satellite.
Yep.
Obviously, if that's aliens. The case, the military is not going to tell us. They're just going to be like, weather balloon.
Yeah.
It's a weather balloon.
It's those weather balloons again.
Yeah.
It's that man with balloons tied to his chair.
People argue that the duration of the signal doesn't make sense because they're like, if it was an alien message, why would they send something that was only 72 seconds long? But the whole point is that
it
wasn't necessarily only 72 seconds. That's just how long the telescope was able to observe it.
It's just in that space for that long.
By the time we knew about the message, a few days had passed. So the signal could have been there for a few days. Huh. Scientists have also argued that the strength of the signal was too strong, that it would basically be impossible for a civilization to be that technologically advanced.
Oh, would it?
To send a signal that strong from that far away.
Oh.
To which I say, get over yourself.
Like, you think we're the...
What do you mean? Yeah.
Higher power here?
Listen, look at America right now.
We're so indulgent.
We're not the smartest people in the galaxy.
What if it was a radio wave signal, but they were listening to, what's a popular song in the late 70s? What if they were just listening to, they were flying by in their hovercraft or whatever they're in, and they were blaring whatever song was popular that day, and they had their windows down, and that's what the signal picked up.
You're... version of like what aliens do out there.
It's probably not it.
It's real good though. Yeah. I really enjoy it. Kara's just like, they're just out there living their life. They're going to the store. Yeah. They're listening to music.
Yeah. They're not experimenting on things. And
no. They're not going to hurt us.
No.
They're not going to probe.
No.
Some people have even pointed out that it could have just been some kind of glitch in Big Ear's computer system. And I guess we have to always consider the possibility of a computer error.
Computers have problems.
But this is the least likely answer to me, in my professional opinion. Mm-hmm. Amateur astronomer Robert Gray was called the most devoted seeker of the WOW signal.
Oh.
He died a few years ago, but during his lifetime, he did so much important work related to this. According to him, it couldn't have been a satellite for a few reasons. People would have seen it. It would have been picked up more than once because satellites broadcast regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And if it was a secret military satellite, it doesn't make any sense that they would broadcast on a channel that is widely used by astronomers. Like, that's a well-known thing. So it wouldn't have been able to keep the satellite secret at all.
Right.
So that doesn't make any sense. His favorite theory was that the message was basically like transmitted somehow. And then whatever that it was being used to transmit, it has to circle around like in orbit or in the rotation of its planet or whatever before transmitting again. So if you think of it like a lighthouse, like it's always rotating, beaming its light out. And then the key is you have to be looking at the right place at the right time. Right. And remember, here on Earth, we're also orbiting and rotating.
Yeah. Unless we're flat.
We're still orbiting and rotating, just like a little disc, to see when it passes by again. So if it's up there always orbiting and rotating, and so are we, who knows when it might line up again.
Yeah.
This is from an interview with Gray. When you step back from all of this a little bit, you notice that almost all searches for extraterrestrial intelligence have been surveys that look at all of these different spots in the sky for just a few minutes at a time.
Hmm.
And the assumption that such searches operate on is that there's a beacon or broadcast of some sort that is on all the time.
Okay.
And so all you have to do is survey the sky, and if it's there, you'll find it. That's the easiest method, and it's the right thing to do when you're first starting out. But if you look at it in a deeper way, and you calculate the kind of energy it would take to operate a beacon that is on all the time, broadcasting in all directions, strong enough so that you could pick it up from many, many light years away, the amount of power that requires is enormous.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the range of thousands and thousands of big power plants. We humans certainly couldn't do anything like that even now. So to have a signal that's always there, you have to assume a very advanced intelligence, and you have to assume that it's highly motivated to talk to us.
Or it's curious, at least.
Right. And neither of those things may be true.
Mm-hmm.
They might not be so rich, or they might not be wanting to use their power or energy so much.
Yeah.
Or they may not really be very interested in talking.
Right.
They could also use some other cheaper strategy, like brief periodic broadcasting, mm-hmm. a sweeping lighthouse beam, or other methods.
Hmm.
So then he talks about this other method of searching for extraterrestrial intelligence called optical SETI, which is where you look at stars and you look for sudden, brief flashes of light that are stronger than what a star would do.
Oh.
The idea that extraterrestrials are trying to communicate by laser.
They're flashing their vehicle lights at us.
Yes. They're just like when, you know, mm-hmm. there's a cop coming. watch out. Speed trap. But as with most, this is also the quote from him. As with most SETI projects, they're simply scanning the sky, looking at each spot for roughly a minute. And at the end of a couple years, they're going to say they've looked at every spot in the sky and they didn't see any flashes. But of course, you have the same problem as you do with radio surveys. You look in every direction, but you only do it for a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
And so if anyone were broadcasting with the lighthouse method, you'd be unlikely to find them because you have to be looking at the exact time that they broadcast.
Yeah.
What are the odds?
Yeah.
Huh. And I have one last quote I want to read from this interview with him where he says, over the years, I've talked to a lot of astronomers and a lot of people involved with SETI. And whenever the topic of wow comes up, they seem to believe that everybody has looked for it and that it's been checked out. But I've never been able to find anyone else who has looked for it. In fact, nobody other than Ohio State seemed all that interested in trying to confirm it at all. Now, fortunately, that created a situation where I was able to convince several scientists to help me look for it using various kinds of radio telescopes, including the Very Large Array, the Mount Pleasant Radio Observatory in Tasmania, and a small one that I built myself.
Oh, wow.
And I will say, even though he's looked and looked and looked, he's also never found it again. But he also never found an explanation, period.
Right.
So it's like, we can't say it's aliens, but you can't say it isn't either.
Right, exactly.
I did read this one article, though, where an astronomer was like, listen, this isn't that unusual. He was a real party pooper. He's like, this isn't great. Even weird. In those days, it was really common to pick up these kinds of signals just one time.
Mm, was it?
And I'm like, well, then why was the guy so impressed by it? Why did he
get so excited?
But he was like, it was really common to pick these up just once because computers didn't have the ability to do the real-time follow-ups. Like I said, it took them a few days before they knew it happened.
Yeah, but
he was like, if this happened today, the computer would immediately alert scientists that something wild had happened and the telescope could look right then to where the signal came from and we would know what it was. Mm. The few days of lag time between where the signal occurred and when we noticed it is the problem. And I'm like, well, yeah, obviously that's the problem.
Clearly.
Obviously, trying to figure out the source of this one-time signal is the whole point.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that it's not aliens.
Right, exactly. It doesn't mean something wasn't trying to communicate with us.
He's saying that once computers got sophisticated enough for that signal follow-up investigation to happen in immediate real time, the number of mystery signals dropped, which could explain why we've never had a repeat of the wow signal.
AI aliens on the computer could communicate with outer space aliens.
I want to point out that when we've sent signals into space to try and see if we get a response, there have been several that we've sent that were just one-time broadcasts.
Right.
And we did send it out into Earth to try to communicate. So like they could have just done a one-time broadcast.
They were like, oh shoot, I forgot to respond to that message.
Like I do every day.
Same.
So that's like the one that we talked about on the podcast just a few weeks ago that we sent from Lexington. That's like, hey, come to Kentucky.
Yeah.
So to close this out, I thought I would just run through a few of the interstellar messages that we have sent into space.
Love it.
First, there was the Morse message, which was a series of brief radio messages in Morse code.
Oh, fun.
And they were directed to Venus in 1962. Ooh. These were in Russian and consisted of three words. Mir, Lenin, and USSR. Mir is the Russian word for space. Okay. Nope. For peace. Okay. Lenin, as far as I can tell, is a reference to a former political leader in Russia. And USSR is what Russia used to be.
Right.
Then there's the...
What if the aliens don't speak Russian?
This is a very valid point that I also don't understand. Then there was the Arecibo message, which was a radio message carrying basic information about humanity and Earth.
Like, they don't already know that information.
It was sent...
They're like, what are they trying to teach us?
It was sent to this area that's about 25,000 light years from Earth, and it was sent back in 1974.
Okay.
So I don't even think it's arrived yet. It was broadcast into space a single time via frequency-modulated radio waves, and it was meant as a demonstration of human technological achievement rather than an actual attempt to talk with aliens. And then we waited a little bit to try again. Next would be the Cosmic Call, which was two sets of interstellar radio messages that were sent from the Ukraine in 1999, and then a second one in 2003. Another Russian message was sent between those two calls, and this one was called the Teenage Message. I love this one.
Oh my gosh.
So it was a series of interstellar radio transmissions sent to six solar type stars during August to September of 2001.
Okay.
The message's content and target stars were selected by a group of teens from four Russian cities who collaborated in person and via the internet. These transmissions included a live concert, which made them the first musical interstellar message.
I know. That's really cute.
Then we have a message from Earth, which was a high-powered digital radio signal that was sent on October 9th, 2008. It was sent toward another terribly named planet, Gliese, G-L-I-S-E, 581C.
Oh, love it.
Scientists had identified this as the first potentially Earth-like planet in the habitable zone of its star, potentially capable of supporting life.
Okay.
So the message from Earth signal is a digital time capsule containing 501 messages that were selected through a competition on the social networking site Bebo. More than 500,000 people, including celebrities and politicians, participated in the AMFE project.
That's wild.
Which was the world's first digital time capsule where the content was selected by the public.
Oh, how cool.
The signal will reach that planet in early 2029.
Okay.
In 2008, we sent Across the Universe, a radio message consisting of the song Across the Universe by the Beatles. This was mostly a publicity stunt. It was done to celebrate the anniversary of the song's recording and the 50th anniversary of NASA.
What?
And the format used wasn't really something that aliens would likely know how to decipher. Like,
huh?
And it was sent in the direction of the star Polaris, which apparently makes it unlikely to reach any alien life form should they exist.
Well, that's
so whatever large amount of money was spent on that seems
was wasteful. Like,
ridiculous. Then we have Hello from Earth, which was sent to Gliese 581D again in 2009.
Like okay.
Well, it's the one that they're saying is most likely to have life.
Yeah.
And this was like a website where you could enter in a message that would be included in the transmission. And the website's gone.
That's interesting.
But you can still see it in like the web archive.
Okay, yeah.
The link's in my show notes. It's great. Like you can read the messages people put in there. And I just really loved it.
Forget Facebook. I just want to read all those.
It's so fun. In 2012, we sent messages in reply to the WOW signal to try and get a response.
Okay.
But that never came, obviously. In 2013, we sent out the Lone Signal, a crowdfunded project that transmitted short 144-character messages by citizens of Earth to the red dwarf star Gliese 526, which is not the same as the other one.
No.
The project lost funding shortly after it began, so the transmission stopped.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. I wonder why.
In 2016, we sent a simple response to an elemental message, which consisted of 3,775 worldwide responses to this question. How will our present environmental interactions shape the future? It also features a smaller honorary mention text archive and a series of images of Earth.
Oh.
And it was also sent towards Polaris, which is about 434 light years from Earth.
Huh.
The last one we have is the sonar calling GJ273B.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one.
Catchy. Mm-hmm. In 2017 and 18, which sent 33 pieces of music to a potentially habitable exoplanet.
Oh.
The project was devised as a celebration, an artistic and scientific experiment, and a collective rumination on what it means to be human and alien. It will take approximately 12.4 Earth years to arrive at its destination, making a potential reply arrive around 2043.
Oh. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's so interesting.
I think so, too. But also, when you look at it, I know there were some that were a series, but others were one-time messages. So why are we so like sure that aliens wouldn't just do the same thing?
Right, exactly. Yeah, why? I mean, what if they are getting those and they're just responding to that one message? It's not like we're responding right back because we're not getting them. Why don't we just place one of those contraptions in every state and in every country so when the world's moving, it's constantly catching all of it?
I mean, if we can spend money just to send a Beatles song out into space, why can't we put that towards something that could actually be useful? I just love it. I think it's really interesting to think about.
It was a fun episode.
We love you guys. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Yeah. Goodbye.
Goodbye.